Welcome, and thank you for holding. At this time, your lines are in listen-only mode. A public comment period is scheduled to take place after the opening remarks. If you are interested in commenting on today's topic, you may press star one on your phone at any time to be placed in the queue. There is a limited time set aside for public comment, so please keep your comment brief. Stating your name and affiliation when prompted is optional. However, please provide at least an identifying alias. This will assist in administering this session. This call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Odette Madriago. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Morning.
And welcome to our final subcommittee call before we all get together in Sacramento in July. I really appreciate you all hanging in here with us as we approach summer and giving us your time and your thoughtfulness. And I especially want to thank this group in particular for all the homework we got. I think percentage-wise, you guys did by far the best job and some very insightful and helpful comments. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Radhika to do roll call, and then we can get going.
Thank you, Odette. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to do a quick roll call starting on around the table first.
Corey, yes. Kelly Kirkpatrick.
Paul Hadley.
Hortensia Muniz.
Odette Madriago.
Jeff Wong.
And Radhika Madel. And now I'm going to turn over to the phone. Bill and Carol.
Here.
Bill Johnson.
Here.
Bob Peoples.
Here.
Bob Delaney.
Here.
Bill Good.
Here.
Jay Choi. Lauren Hines. Okay, I think we... Amber, when Jay and Lauren, if they sign in, please let us know and announce them.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Now I would hand over to Bill.
Very good. Thank you. Remember that this meeting is being recorded, and it will be posted on the DTSC website. And for those of you who are interested in making a public comment, please press star 1 to admit yourself to the queue. For those of us as GRSP members, you can either use your own phone's mute or you can use the calling center's mute by hitting star 6 to mute and star 7 to unmute. For today, this is subcommittee 3.
To unmute. That's star 6 to unmute also.
Oh, I'm sorry. Star 6 to unmute as well. Fine.
Right.
My mistake. Today's subcommittee call has to do with quality assurance. In the last call, we spent a fair amount of time and got through all our questions and our agenda. Almost everyone submitted some homework with a summary of the thoughts that you had during that call, and I want to take this moment to thank you for doing that. Odette already did that, but I do think it's an important way of summarizing the things that we've done. What I'd like to try to accomplish today is, rather than start from first principles again on this, I'd like each of us to review the homework for the rest of the members of the group. I would like each of us who has questions with respect to clarification to ask those. I don't think I'd like to go to the point of discussing pros and cons and merits. I'd like us to do that along with the full group, because there's some energy behind that. I'd also like to encourage you that if there's more that you'd like to add to your homework to embellish, either because of things that you read in other people's homework or because of additional thoughts that you've had since that time, please feel free to do so.
Do you mean on the phone orally, or do you mean to rewrite this new submission?
Either or both, Joe. On the phone is welcome, and if you want to modify, you're more than welcome to submit it as written comments, either or both. The other thing that I'd like us to take a few minutes on, based on my review of the homework, is I'd like us to at least poke a little bit more at the idea of work plans and see if you have any further thoughts. That was not deeply explored in the homework, at least not based on my reading of it.
Excuse
so
me.
That's
Lauren
my.
Hine has joined.
I'm sorry. Who's joined?
Lauren Hine has joined.
Hi, Lauren. How are you?
Good. Apologies for being late.
It's not a problem. You just sort of leave $5 at the door.
Okay.
So in any event, that's kind of what I'd like to try to accomplish today. I have a hard time imagining that we have 2.5 hours worth of content here, and I want to thank Subcommittee 2 for establishing the precedent that when you no longer have anything to say, you quit. So we can perhaps return some time to ourselves if it's appropriate. At this point, we get to the opportunity for public comment that will be made to us as members of the Green Ribbon Science Panel on this agenda item. First of all, I'd like to poll through where we all are as to whether there are members of the public at our sites that are interested in speaking. And I'll start here in Dallas. There is no one with me.
No one in DTSC.
Okay.
No one at Berkeley Center for Green Chemistry.
Okay.
Nobody in Emeryville.
Okay.
No one in Washington, D.C. at the ACS Green Chemistry Institute.
Okay.
No one in Juneau, Alaska.
Well, this is not a very tough ticket then, is it? Okay, then I think that clears the sites. Operator, do you have people in the queue?
We can explain to them how to go to queue. We haven't done. At this time, if you would like to provide comments to the Green Ribbon Science Panel, we don't have anybody in queue at this time.
Okay, I can believe that. So let's perhaps we'll give them just about another minute or so to see if anyone queues up, and if not, we'll just roll right on.
We also did not have any public comments on at Tuesday's phone call. I forgot to mention that to you earlier, Bill.
I think most of the people who wanted to comment did so before our first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that you know, with all the access that we've had to us, I think the people who are interested have said what they need to say to us, and I think most of the rest are pretty bored. All right, well, operator, no one queuing up at this time?
I show no questions at this time or no comments at this time.
All right, very good. Then why don't we go ahead and move to our discussion and move to the formal agenda. Once again, what I'd like to do is review the homework that you submitted. You're welcome to do this in any fashion that you feel is appropriate, either to discuss it in general. You're welcome to read it. I will probably read mine and add some comments. It's not terribly long. Why don't we go ahead and start? Who would like to have the first crack at this?
Bill, just a question. This is Lauren. I would not like to have the first crack at this, but I was...
That wasn't a question, Lauren.
So the answer is I would not like to have the first crack at this, but I do have a question. And do we... it's the topic of work plans, you said, is also on the table here?
Yeah, it is, and we talked about that a little bit the last time, but in looking at the homework, I didn't see much in the way of substantive comments about work plans.
Right.
But
okay.
I was mainly teeing that up to see if there were other things that you wanted to get on the table.
I think that's a great idea. I would propose we do talk about work plans.
Well, then why don't we do the following? I'll just go ahead and go first, and then I want the rest of you all to be thinking about who goes next. Don't make me call on you.
Are we doing this homework by homework so we could pull one up and focus on that, or how are we doing this?
I think that's probably the best thing, Joe, and you don't have to read it verbatim. If you like, you can simply review it in terms of comments. I just kind of want to refresh people's memories as to where we were, and particularly also use this for an opportunity to ask each other questions about the things that we've written or things that we've said.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Well, yeah, I was just thinking if you're going now, are you going to provide comments that you have on all five homeworks, or would you say let's do Lauren's homework and go through, see what everybody has to say about that? Or?
No, I haven't divided mine up into topics, and I've got about 700 words.
Oh, I see. You're going to just – okay, I'm sorry. I didn't understand. You're going to go through your homework. Okay, go ahead.
Correct. And then I would ask each of us to go through the homework.
I got you. I didn't understand. All right, sorry.
So for me, I've got two overriding concerns about the process. First, associated with the expense that could go along with the quality assurance process, particularly as the way we saw it in regulations last year. And the second is what seems to me to be the possibility of a never-ending process of enforced checks and rechecks that really don't add much clarity. As far as certification goes, it seems to me that certification would be most required for third-party assessors who hang out a shingle and who could be employed, particularly by small companies that would need alternatives assessment done, or by others who would be contracting with them, so that there would be some kind of certification of quality for people who are purchasing these services from people that they don't necessarily know. Exactly what that would be, Lauren and Bob submitted with their homework some approaches that could be used. From my perspective, it could be as simple as registration with DTSC as an assessor, demonstrating, as was noted in, I think, Lauren, in the DFE document, that you have at least some familiarity with the ISO process and with DFE, but some demonstration. Or it could go as far as saying that you have to demonstrate some ability from having taken a course or taken a test. My concern is that if you go to the greatest extent, it becomes something of a burden for DTSC in terms of the certification. And based on what we've heard from the department, resources will be limited, and I think we want to be kind of gentle about what we're requiring them to keep. As far as proprietary assessors are concerned, and that by that I mean someone who works for a company or works for an NGO or works for another interested party, I'm less concerned about certification there, particularly because I see certification as a protection for the person who contracts with that assessor, and I see no reason that it's necessary to protect a company from its own employees. That it's their job to decide whether you have someone who is qualified or not. And in terms of the quality of what results, you will see that my basic approach to this is that I believe that these alternatives assessments will be largely public documents. They will be subject to comment from people who are interested, either other manufacturers or NGOs or other interested parties. And there will be significant debate about the quality of these that will occur, whether or not there is a third party that goes over them from first principles. I liked Joe's idea of different pathways for AAs that either do or do not contain CBI, and in my comments I kind of expanded on that a little bit. It seems to me that an AA that contains no CBI is transparent and essentially finds its way into the public domain and is eligible for comment, criticism, and if you will, peer review just by the nature of things. People will be reviewing that. But as far as I'm concerned, a transparent alternatives assessment like this is the equivalent of playing poker with all the cards on the table, and the hand calls itself. The other possibility, and I don't know what I mean when I say semi-transparent, but I'm keying off of Joe's idea that some will undoubtedly contain CBI, that to the extent there is CBI, some review is probably warranted. And my approach to this would be, if you're claiming CBI in an alternatives assessment, what you probably should do is, under secrecy agreement with a third-party assessor, show that assessor the CBI, recognizing that you have a secrecy agreement, you have a means of continuing to keep it secret. But that assessor would be trusted by the state and others to say, I have seen the CBI. What is in the alternatives assessment is an accurate representation, and that rather than having to certify the entire assessment, only to review what is claimed as CBI and act as a referee on that under secrecy agreement with the company. If you are a small company and if you're having to hire a third party, You're going to be contracting with someone for the analysis. There may be some further validation by DTSC or a second contractor. On the other hand, it could also be the same thing, that where it's transparent, others will comment, and you get your peer review for free, if you will. Final thing that from my homework that I want to key on here, I think this is going to be a process that will need some kind of decision-making process or conflict resolution. I fully suspect that there are going to be winners and losers in this process, that when you have a priority chemical, the people who make that priority chemical will undoubtedly be doing an alternatives assessment. I suspect that people who make alternative materials will also do an alternatives assessment and submit it to the public domain. And in the end, someone, probably DTSC in some fashion, is going to have to make a decision about who's right, who's wrong, and whether one alternative is significantly better than the other. And somehow in this process, there needs to be a way of getting to that decision. It's obviously the province of DTSC to make the decision, but how you get to that, whether the department has the resources to do that or not, is another story. And in my homework, I suggested at least one way in which you might engage a third-party organization to review under the auspices of DTSC. So I guess I'll stop there. I have only a very short paragraph about work plans, and since we're going to take that up later, I won't go into it. That's a summary of my comments, embellished a bit from what was written. I'd be happy to answer questions or move on to the next report.
Well, I have a few questions and maybe a comment or two, and they might relate to my report.
I think that, Joe, since you and I at least were starting from similar places, that's a good thing to do. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Well, just first, maybe a minor point, but your argument that proprietary assessors, that is, internal company assessors, may not need to be certified because companies don't need to be protected from themselves. Well, I think that's true about companies, but we're also expecting these assessors to be incorporating concerns for the externalization of risk onto the public and the environment. That's sort of, you know, one of the central goals here. And so that's something that it is hard for companies to do themselves. And so I guess we're expecting the assessors to, you know, be taking that seriously, not just the company's interests. So companies may not need to be protected from themselves, but maybe, you know, the public and the environment need some protection here, or at least, you know, an honest look with their interests in mind. So
I understand that, Joe. Yeah. Let me just say that my way of dealing with that,
yeah,
if I'm a company reviewer and I don't incorporate that,
yeah,
and I submit this AA to the public domain,
yeah,
within about 15 minutes, people will be all over it as having been inadequate.
Right. Well, okay. Well, that goes to the next point I want to raise with you, is because you said that the AAs will become publicly available eventually. And, I mean, I think that public access and transparency is very important. But I think we need to be very careful about that, because I'm not so sure about that at all. I mean, I think if something is claimed CVI, it's never going to be revealed to the public. That's the point of it, because once it's revealed to the public, it's no longer CVI. So I think that CBI claims are permanent. I think that, unfortunately, just from having been a lawyer working for a company myself, I mean, the natural incentives, you know, leaving aside anybody's, you know, malicious intent or anything, but the natural incentives are going to be to vigorously protect CBI, which, because, I mean, I've been part of teams and companies that scrutinize competitors, you know, public documents for clues about what they're doing internally, including, you know, SEC reports and, you know, all kinds of things. And so I think these things will be scrutinized by competitors. Companies will know that, and there will be a fairly, there will be a lot of pressure to make sure they don't reveal what alternatives are being developed, et cetera, even what the ingredients are. I mean, I think that there will be aggressive CVI claims that will be expected to be kept permanent from the public. DTSC is not going to be in a position to review the merits of all those CVI claims, you know, whether they actually are CVI, all of that stuff that is a problem with TSCA. And I think that there's even talk, I think, on some of the other subcommittees that the algorithms that companies develop for doing the AAAs, they themselves might be proprietary. I know people are filing patent applications on things like that. So I really worry that CVI is going to make alternative assessments, unreviewable in any meaningful way by the public. And if I could, I
want to make sure that I appreciate that, and I want to make sure that I've been clear about what my position was on this. That with respect to that, if you've claimed CBI, then there at least needs to be some third party that reviews your claims and certifies that what's brought forward is accurate. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be disclosed to the public. That's
when you say what's brought forward is accurate, I'm not sure what I understand what you're saying about that.
Well, let's put it this way. Your argument is that CBI is going to stay CBI, and that's probably true.
Yeah.
What the public, at least what I imagine the public is interested in, is whether the conclusions drawn from the CBI are accurate. And that's where a third party could be helpful in reviewing. Let's just imagine it's as simple as a calculation. If you claim the identity of a compound as being CBI, first of all, hazard traits, as I understand them, will not be CBI. So the first question for that third-party reviewer would be, has the hazard data been accurately dealt with in the alternatives assessment? Doesn't have to be revealed other than to the third party under secrecy agreement. It still maintains the confidentiality, but you at least have one other person who's reviewed and said, yes, I've looked at the calculation is correct. And without going into all the detail, that's what I hope would be a safeguard under the circumstances where CBI was claimed.
Well, that may be in the examples, yeah, that you're contemplating. I guess examples I sort of worry about are things like, well, suppose there's a compound and there are conflicting studies. You know, this is what environmental struggles are all about. Like, which study do you believe? Which animal test is correct? How do you resolve? And there are going to be judgments to make. I mean, in which reasonable people will disagree. And I think that is the problem. That not all the decisions that are made in conducting an AA are going to be completely free from doubt that, you know, a computer could do. There are going to be difficult judgments made, and there isn't necessarily going to be any, you know, correct resolution of them. And that's where you get, you know, self-interest coloring how those judgments are made.
And that's my point. That's why you would let a third party review the CBI, and if the third party disagrees with that, then there has to be a solution. Joe, why don't you go ahead on?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't mean to. This is a complicated issue. I mean, I worry that ultimately where there is CBI, even with this kind of third party review, it's going to be limited transparency. So we're really going to have to trust the system that's put in, the third party assessors, DTSC's role, because I think it's going to be basically something that the outside, the public, and also competitors are just going to have confidence that there is a fair system that has everybody's interest in place making judgments. And if they don't, they're not going to trust it, and the whole system is just not going to work. That would be my...
Let me interrupt real quickly to let you all know that Jay has joined us on the call.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for coming.
Okay. So those are probably my main comments and questions about yours directly, Bill.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead with your own?
Okay. Well, then it would probably be quick, because I'm concerned that the CBI claims will end up being extensive in AAs, partly for the reason I said lawyers are going to be very protective of the CBI, and then I think also the interest will... It will be apparent that the more CBI is, the less there is in an AA, the less, you know, outside scrutiny there will be. The whole system will be just easier to manage if there's more CBI. So that's another unfortunate, factor militating to large to extensive CBI claims. And then there isn't going to be anybody really in a position. DTSC is not going to be able to review them all for accuracy, so that's another reason. I think there'll be a lot of CBI claims, and making the AAs really not reviewable by the public. So in that case, I think we need a very robust system that will actually be able to reach decisions that may be against the interest of the individual company, saying, you know, here's a safer alternative, you should switch to it. That may be against their direct commercial interest. We need a system that can do that and that people will believe will do that. So I think that's going to be difficult. I think it's going to require an extensive quality assurance program with independent third-party assessors that actually are making independent decisions. I think the internal company assessors need to be certified and have some own professional obligations, just like lawyers do and doctors do. They have professional obligations to their profession outside that are not directly related to the company. I think that's going to have to be in place for anybody to have any reasonable confidence that that system will work. So what I propose as a separate track in my comments is to offer a much simpler, cheaper, less involved system if there's no CBI claimed in the AA. And I think it probably has to be, you know, no CBI. I mean, so if there's any information that's material to the conduct of the AA, needs to be transparent, and if it's not material to the AA and it's companies prefer to keep it CBI, well then I guess don't include it if it's not material to the conduct of the AA. That's what I would say. So if it's completely transparent AA, then we can rely on all the other forces that Bill mentioned to police them. NGOs, the public, competitors, everybody else out there, and we've talked about this. I've talked about this among some other NGO people, and I mean, you know, I think there's some sort of tentative support for this, I could say. I mean, I'll just add one point. I mean, another issue here really is even in transparent assessments like this, it's difficult for the public to really police them. I mean, I think we've all seen, risk assessments done for hazardous waste sites or Superfund cleanups, you know, by Environ or others. They're very, you know, there's a lot of judgments involved in them. They're very complicated. It's actually difficult for the public to sort of penetrate the assumptions and defaults that are all incorporated into those documents. So even publicly available AAs, I think, are going to be difficult to really penetrate. But I think there's much more ability to do that, obviously, if there's no CBI, and I think particularly if the assessors have some kind of, you know, training and certification process that it's worth that trade-off. I think people perceive that. And I guess I think there are just huge advantages to transparent process, and so we ought to create some motivation and incentive to choose a transparent process. And I guess the main incentive there would be is to actually have CBI claims entail some costs, which are embodied in having a truly meaningful third-party assessment process that people actually trust and believe in. So that's really the thrust of my comments, and I've outlined a few criteria for what a third-party review would look like, and I think that tracks a lot of things that people have said already, so I won't repeat all that. So that's the main point of my comments.
Very good. Thank you, Joe. Questions for Joe?
Yeah, this is Dale. Joe.
Yeah.
So it kind of sounds like what you're saying is that it won't work. I mean, the way that it's being envisioned, that it won't work, because in reality, as you say, there will be there will be CBI that shows up in virtually everything, because it shows up in, you know, every review of every type of thing that's intellectual property or that's trade secret or whatever. So, I mean, that's kind of what I hear you say on your first half, that it won't work. But on the second half, the one thing that I get a little concerned about is throwing these things into kind of a
quasi-public review by a bunch of different groups. Because I have a problem when I see reviews or opinions coming up in a series of blogs. A series of blogs, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's no way to assess what information was used when somebody did that. It just gets repeated again and again and again, and it starts to become fact after a while. So personally, I see a need for something a little bit different than that.
Well, do you mean okay? I'm confused by your comment. So do you mean in a transparent, say there's a process with no CVI claims, you see a need for a review process other than relying on the public?
Just relying on a let's say, a non-structured review by anybody who wants to review it.
You know what I didn't mention is I was contemplating also that there ought to be a petition process. So let's say there's an AA that comes out that's fully transparent, there's no CVI, and somebody thinks there's a problem or they missed something or didn't do something right. There ought to be a way to get that remedied. And so if there's a meritorious argument for an error in an AA, that ought to be maybe a subject to a petition to DTSC to review that and request it be redone or get it fixed. So that there could be some kind of formal process. I mean, but otherwise, these AAs are going to be important, and if people blog about them or have opinions about them, I don't think we can really prevent that.
Or have a problem with it necessarily. That should be the kind of the review.
Well, and also as to whether there's always going to be CVI, you know, I think there always will be if there's no cost. For a company to make a lot of CVI claims, you know, if there's no second track, why not? Why wouldn't they? There's no reason not to. But this process actually puts a little cost to that, and I don't know. I think a lot of times CVI, maybe it doesn't really work that much. I know that Darrell O'Rourke says companies send him information that would be CVI, but they just don't want to get the ding of lack of information on Good Guy's website. So that's all it's worth. You know, so it may be that some of this CVI is not really that valuable, and so I guess this program would kind of put that to the test. Companies should think about, well, how important is it really? If there's no cost associated with it, we're going to see huge claims. But it may be that, you know, a cost like having to do a real third-party review is enough to create incentive to not claim CVI and just let it be transparent.
Other questions for Joe?
This is Todd. It's not really a question, and again, I'll come at this a little more from the International Standards Organization, or the ISO process, the way it's been generally practiced over, let's say, the last 15 years. And you could start off with the environmental management system stuff under 14001, where if you wanted to go through and have it third-party assessed, you could do that. You could also self-certify, which is what Joe is really talking a little bit about. We followed on with that when we were doing greenhouse gas work, where what we did is if you did not have an attestation that came from a third party as to the accuracy of your study, what you could do is put out a very detailed report of everything that was in your study, and then you wouldn't have to go for a third party. So what Joe's talking about is it has some some substance and some history in terms of the way ISO has traditionally handled these. But I think one of the more important things associated with that is there hasn't been, to my knowledge, any major company, except maybe one, that's ever come out and self-certified against the 14001 standard. And to date, nobody has come out and put together a full report other than having a verification. Third-party verification of the things, especially in the greenhouse gas arena, which really I'm looking at as a close parallel to what is being done here, because for greenhouse gas, you have to put together your plan of how you're going to do it, which has to be essentially validated before you do it, which is a function probably of DTSC, then it has to be third-party verified to ensure so that somebody can attest to the accuracy and the judgments that were made in it. And so you're very, very close in terms of the way things operate currently under greenhouse gas work that is currently done here in the United States.
So are you saying that companies chose the more transparent process?
I'm saying that they did not choose it.
They did not choose it. They chose the more confidential process and subjected themselves to the third part need for the verifiers.
Correct. And the reason why people have done that is that anytime a company goes out and self-certifies, they are bringing themselves more into question. Even if they put more effort into it and is more accurate, they would end up getting more comments back on what they had done, as opposed to having some coming from an independent third party, because then no way to question it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. This is Bob.
Bob, go ahead.
Obviously, everybody's acknowledged this is a pretty complex situation, but it sounds like the way that this discussion is going right now is offers a path forward that might provide the, I'm going to use the word compromise, but compromise always sounds negative, and I don't mean that. Maybe what I really mean is a win-win approach where the CBI concerns and legitimate issues that do exist in many cases can be addressed, yet the issue of veracity and transparency is managed through the independent third-party process. So that means the acceptance of a third-party assessment here is going to be based on the perception of the legitimacy or the experience or the independence of that third party. And maybe the win-win here is that the DTSC, we can outline a process through which the DTSC qualifies the independent third-party auditors so that when the public or the NGOs review that information, knowing that it's going to be laced with some CBI issues, they could feel that the analysis has really been done independently, the quality is there, and the veracity of the report will be based on, you know, the training and the independence of the third-party auditor in this particular case.
Yeah, now this is Todd again. That's why when I sent everybody, or I sent to Kathy and she sent out the draft final document on competency, that's one of the things we as a verification body have to supply to the American National Standards Institute and are checked by them more than yearly on what we do to make sure that we have the individual competencies in order to be able to do the work. But the beauty about that is that we have to be accredited by ANSI, and then in this case, DTSC would just accept the ANSI accreditation, and then they could make their own checks, but they wouldn't have the expense. So the expense would go to us verifiers through the independent organization, the American National Standards Institute. We have to report to them, but DTSC has the ultimate authority over ANSI and us by being able to do their own audits. And that's the way the process is working now in the United States for greenhouse gases for all of the various registries, not only California, but also the Voluntary Carbon Standard for the American Carbon Registry, and for CCX, although that's not operational. So we report through to ANSI. ANSI then reports through the programs that are supporting it, and the program that's supporting this would be DTSC. They would be able to use the 60 document, because all you'd have to do is replace a couple of words in there and go from greenhouse gas to AAs and define what the competencies are, and then that could be part of a program that's going out. And it follows along to what Joe would be doing, because in that, if you didn't have any confidential business information and you wanted to essentially self-certify, that pathway could be made through this, but probably most people would still end up going through for the third-party verification.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I could see your argument that there's a motivation to use a third party that's, you know, other than protecting CBI, and it's just to have people trust it more.
Correct.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, Lauren, did you want in here? Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. I think this is very interesting. I'm interested. I think it's a great idea, Joe, the sort of full CBI approach. But I think there's a piece that Bob's comments triggered for me is that there are tools and reporting standards and things like that that are emerging that fit into what we are calling an AA here. There's no sort of, it's not like the AA method is a standardized method itself. It will, some of it is very much subject to interpretation. Some of it will be built on emerging and existing tools. For example, GCI and ACS have a new standard or almost emerging standing on reporting information on chemicals and things like that. So pieces of that, or you know, even the green screen method as a way of doing hazard assessment is a method that's available for different organizations to use. So I think we have to be clear, you know, that when we're talking about these sort of qualified people, like qualified to do what? I think we also, you know, need to be building on existing standards. That if somebody does their reporting using the new GCI, what is it, 355 standard, then that could be certified. That piece of itself might be certified, but the AA method could be transparent. And I think this gets a little bit to Bill's comment about sort of the semi-transparent. You know, here's the AA method assumptions are very clear, and here they used this, they were certified to use this reporting technique, and then here they used this method for hazard assessment or whatever. There's, I think, this sort of mixed semi-transparent approach built on partial pieces of it that can be standardized.
Yeah, I don't, the question of how much the AA methodology itself needs to be standardized is, I guess, another committee's dealing with that, but I guess it's an issue for us, too, quality assurance. I mean, it will be a maddening system if there's a wide variety of acceptable AA methodologies, all of which lead to different answers in a particular situation.
Well, and I'm here to tell you that you will have dueling AAs. You will.
And so one of the lessons I think we've learned is to make progress on challenges like this, incredibly complex, incredibly important challenges for which there remains a lot of ambiguity because we don't have all the answers and experience to guide us, is that we do our best to outline a framework that seems to make sense. We start the process, and then a year or two down the road, you conduct a separate meta-analysis and say, okay, what have we learned? What's working? What's not working? And how do we refine that so we get better with time, as opposed to spending 2 or 3 or 4 years trying to define the perfect system up front, knowing that that is, you know, practically impossible.
Who else would like to review their homework?
Dale, I would.
Go ahead, Dale.
Okay. So I took this from the side of the field of toxicology, since that's where the actual information is coming from. And just to let you know, whether it's toxicology of chemicals, environmental toxicology, drugs, whatever it happens to be, there are very specific standards on quality assurance and then review of documents and so on and so forth. And that's been in place since the late 70s. And so, and in those particular systems, there's always, and as I've pointed out in my homework here, there's two different processes. There's the quality assurance that relates to the process and the procedures that are actually being used. That's a very specific type of quality assurance. It's not the same as quality assurance coming from a scientific or technical review. So it's two different types of things. And so my position on this is that there has to be some kind of guidance, and I've used that as a term, some kind of guidance coming from DTSC to say here's the minimal standard or the recommended tool as of this time period that should be used. And that's possible. You could get it down to two or three different types of tools, but then those tools, if they have to be something new that's developed or combine those tools together or something, this is what I would say could be done by a third party, and I would do it with DTSC putting out an RFP to actually have it done. and come up with that particular standard. And I would call it a minimal standard that has to be used to do an AA type of process. Now, in that standard also then defines the process, QA, that would take place. The huge advantage to this whole program is to have the alternative assessments done internally, and done and initiated internally, done internally, and if the internal people have to use a third party, then that's part of the internal process. So what I would do then in this guidance document is define the qualifications that are needed for those individuals that are doing those two different types of quality assurances. And typically, if you're doing quality assurance of chemicals or drugs within an industry, that's a very specific training type of approach for those individuals. That's easily done online. You can easily do an online training. You update the training so that's very specific and you understand exactly how you have to document that the tools are being done, how they're being used, and so on and so forth. So that's a relatively straightforward process in my mind. I've trained those people myself, and so it's a kind of a constant training, review, update, and everything that makes them qualified. Then they are qualified within the company. If they're, you know, if they're part of the company, they're qualified to do that. Outside companies, they would follow the same kind of this training certification process. And I think the easiest way to do it, again, is an online approach. And that can be done through online educational programs. You can do that through any of the UC universities through Extension, or you can set up an online training approach that's been done at NIH. National Library of Medicine have these online training programs with tests, and then somebody gets qualified for actually doing that in that particular way. So I think you have two different certifications. One, the process part of it that can be done through training, and then you qualify that person that way. And then if the tools are identified and set up, then there's the actual certification that people are qualified to use those particular tools. And so then that kind of separates this in many ways outside of DTSC, and you'll see as I go through this, what I'm trying to do is minimize the resources of DTSC as you go through this. So I think as a alternative assessment begins, what I've called a preliminary work plan is submitted by a company, and that is used to establish, number one, that there is the process that's ongoing with the product, the chemical of concern, and so forth. In that can be separated from CBI information very easily. I think what you establish then is that the process is now ongoing, that a time frame is identified for that, and the work plan includes the identity of the qualified individuals that are going to be involved in the AA process. And then DTSC reviews that and verifies that the chemical, yes, that's on the list. There are products that, you know, these are the correct products that are involved. And then the individuals are indeed qualified. So it's kind of a cursory review of the work plan that it actually meets the standards that are set up in that, what I call the guidance document. Now, how do you get the third-party review of all of that? Because there's going to be consulting groups that are set up that do third-party reviews for people that don't have the internal resources. But then my position is that you could set up, and I just happen to call it a technical and scientific review panel, that DTSC could set up a voluntary review panel that meets approximately four times a year and then this final alternative assessment is presented to that in a public forum, and then the actual panel advises DTSC on what action is to be taken. Then the function of this kind of outside panel then also is identified in that original guidance document. And again, this is voluntary, and I think you probably would have to supply some independent third-party reviewer or reviewers into that panel to actually do some of the homework that's going to be part of the review of the presentation. Again, these presentations can be made, I don't think it necessarily has to be in an auditorium or a room. It possibly could be online, but again, it has to be then public. So what I'm attempting to do in this thing is make a relatively simplified process where the advantage is to have it done internally. People are qualified. There's certain types of standards that they actually meet. There's training standards that will exist within the company. There's training standards that will exist for the people that are doing the AA part of it. You expend probably the minimal amount of resources from DTSC to do this, except to set up that guidance document and then to deal with a review panel coming from the outside. So that's kind of the heart of my my proposal.
Questions or comments for Dale? And Dale, I want to throw one out because the panel that you're talking about sounds to me almost like a science advisory board, as you might know it for EPA, for example.
Yeah, it could be that type of thing. It could, there's a lot of different advisory board processes that exist within the various industry groups.
And I guess the thing, my main question with that is that I think that probably works okay when you have one or two AAs to consider and it's not a burden. But if you go down the line 5 or 10 years and you have a number of them, that kind of strains the volunteerism, doesn't it? If you have 20, 30, 40?
I think the volunteerism part of it becomes a something that people would actually compete for, to tell you the truth, because it would be a desirable thing to be on.
Okay.
Same
other
type
questions
of thing
for Dale?
It's the same type of thing when review committees are set up by EPA, set up by FDA, and so forth. The Society of Toxicology will send out a request for people to either nominate other people or nominate themselves to these particular committees. And there is just a huge amount of nomination and desire to actually be on these committees.
Okay. Other questions?
This is Joe. Well, we've talked about CBI issues a lot, but you're talking about this as you describe it as a public forum, and the review panel would advise DTSC. I mean, I'm wondering, this might not be possible to make this completely transparent.
Yeah, and I was looking at that, Joe, because I was reading your homework piece too, and I think that you can do it both ways. I think you can do it where there's a totally open process. And then I think you can also protect the CBI within that process, because we do that. We do that very specifically in the drug field. So you end up going into an open forum, and you present data, but you actually keep the CBI stuff as part of the contract.
You're talking about for pharmaceutical approvals with FDA and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm talking about that. I'm talking on reviews of certain types of chemicals, so forth, that actually come into a public review.
Well, that's an interesting example, the FDA. I mean, I have a little bit of familiarity with that, and one of the things that helps there is that there are laws requiring disclosure of a certain amount of information about drugs that are in products, the identity of the drug, the side effects. I mean, there's quite a bit that has to be disclosed, and so would be kept CBI if companies could keep it CBI, but the laws require disclosure. Now, manufacturing processes and all kinds of things like that are entitled to CBI protection, but I think it's generally felt that sort of information isn't really necessary to evaluation of the public health and safety. So I guess that would be, you know, I could see that, but I think we're going to have a problem here because I'm not sure that I think that some of the information that's material to the AA assessment is going to end up being CBI, and that might be a distinction from the kind of process you're talking about with the FDA.
Well, yes and no, but what I don't think we ought to do on this particular thing is to design a system, you know, start to talk about a system and design a system with just keeping the fact that there's CBI information there, therefore everything has to be designed around in that way. I think what you do is design the process the way that it should work and then work in a way to deal with CBI information. But not start with CBI as the, you know, kind of the elephant on the table, and everything has to work around that.
Other comments, questions for Dale?
This is Todd, not a question, but one of the things that I agree completely with Dale, and it's a very good suggestion, that the DTSC has to put out their view of what's going to be in, if I'm understanding Dale correctly, what's going to be in an alternatives assessment. Because if you don't have that as guidance, the third parties that are going to be doing the essentially verification or putting together the attestation of the correctness of what was done, they won't have any guidance to go by, and so you're really going to have a system that is, at the end of the day, without that, can't be verified.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying, yeah.
This is Odette. Let me just interject real quickly on guidance. You know, anything that's not actually put into the regulation itself, guidance is very helpful, and hopefully a lot of people would use and follow it, but we have no way to legally mandate it. So just to be clear about that.
So to follow up on Odette's point, this is Colleen. We can take your word guidance and substitute in its place. DTSC must specify in the regulations the minimum standards or data sets that are required in an AA.
Okay, okay, so that's a good point because I think, it has to appear in the regulations, actually.
Todd, as long as you had the floor, are there other comments that you'd like to make pursuant to your positions?
Only one other, Bill. I mean, one of the things that a lot of what you were saying in your document with regards to, and I hate the ultimate thing, was of having the CEO or some very high person sign off on the things, that has generally been sufficient. We, in terms of the work that we've been doing in the ISO world for the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, that's a common thread that comes from a lot of people. But in fact, when you go out and do the verifications, very often, even though somebody in the corporation has signed off at a very high level that it's correct and accurate, you find that it isn't, not because they made a conscious error to do something wrong, but because they just weren't careful in terms of what they were doing.
Todd, could I just make one small correction? I didn't say that's the only thing that needed to be done.
No.
I envisioned that things with no CBI would wind up with a natural, rigorous peer review. And for things that did have CBI, that at least there was some verification process for what was claimed CBI and was transmitted accurately. And somehow I have not explained that well to y'all.
Okay.
That's my position.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, that's a common thread that people like to bring out by having, you know, somebody sign off at a very high management level within the corporation means that it would substitute for a third-party verification.
And but, that was not my position.
Okay, because, in fact, that doesn't work. And I don't know whether people had a chance to read the FDIS document that I put forward on competence, because competence was a big part of the discussion before I had to leave early on the last time. And also, I think when I went through Lauren's homework, she was able to put in a lot of the things that I've been talking about and others have talked about today. So other than that, I just enjoy being able to comment on these things. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Todd. Lauren?
Sure.
Other things to add?
Mine, I think, is pretty simple in some ways, but it was building on the idea of internal versus externally qualified people. And the idea that internally qualified experts can perform AAs internally, but they would need to be verified by a third party. So that there's a little flow chart in my homework that shows that, you know, in determining the need for an AA, you'd need to make a decision to perform it internally or externally. And if you decide to perform it externally, then you're really outsourcing to a qualified person who would be authorized and audited based on their competency, and you wouldn't necessarily be there wouldn't be a need necessarily for auditing specific you'd be auditing the competency of the organization and how well they adhere to their policies and procedures, and probably spot checking individual assessments as part of the ongoing audit process. But if you decide to do it internally, you could potentially save costs by pulling together all of the material, sort of in the way you would prepare yourself for an audit for, say, ISO 14001. You would make sure all your documents were in order and you were convinced that you are going to qualify for certification. Then you could move that to a third party who would verify that these documents were in place and the work had been done and that you do indeed qualify for certification. So it would be kind of a cost-saving step that depends really on an organization's capabilities and resources. I did not consider the idea of, you know, what happens if there's no CBI there. I hadn't thought about that, which is, I still think is an interesting idea. But again, I think that there could be pathways internally, externally, but both those need to go through some kind of third-party verification.
Lauren, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Let's say you're a small company that doesn't have the internal capability to do an AA, mm-hmm. and you have to contract with a third party.
Mm-hmm.
In your vision or in anyone else's vision, do you then need to contract with a second third party to audit the first one?
No.
Why not?
No. Because after listening to you last week with the checkers and the checkers and the checkers, I thought about that a lot and thought that's probably overkill, but what would happen... for example, I think of a good model as a lot of the food safety programs we have. You don't have food safety auditors going around checking every piece of meat that comes out of food processing. What they do is they audit the policies and procedures and the practices and things of the food processors. And there are organizations like NSF International that go around pulling things off the shelves in stores around the country. They're sort of professional auditors. So you would have people auditing these profilers or these assessors, and so there'd be a system for auditing them, but not necessarily. But each individual product wouldn't need to go through two steps. It would only go through one, and you'd be auditing the assessors at a sort of meta level, and there would be cost incurred in that. And maybe that's they pay the cost themselves by becoming qualified, that part of what they pay to become a qualified assessor covers the cost of auditing them.
Other thoughts or questions for Laura or Lauren?
I have a question. It's Joe. Lauren, if the path is chosen to do internally qualified experts and then rely on an external verification. Right, that's another one. That's your second path. Now, verification, what do you envision that evolving? I mean, I take it that's something a little different than the sort of meta-validation you were talking about. This would be a verification of the specific product. And I just want to say, you know, there was a distinction in DTSC's sets of regulations before. In I think early iterations, the third party, the validation or verification was actually a substantive review, and then I think as it emerged in the final draft, it was the word verification. I mean, it was sort of a check the boxes on the process kind of thing. It was a much simpler, non-substantive review. So I guess sort of the word differences between review and verification and everything are sort of starting to carry some substantive content there because of that. So I'm wondering what you mean by verification by the third party, by the outside party.
I view that as verification by the outside party could be almost as much work as the third party doing the entire assessment themselves, depending on how good a job the internal person did. So it really would be focused on the specifics of the product, verifying the toxicological data, verifying the information that they submitted, verifying, you know, whatever the design of this AA process is. It would be a thorough check of references, a check. It would be very specific to the product. And it would be quite extensive, but it would still be less. But some of that legwork would have been done internally and then provided to the third party.
So you're talking about a substantive independent review.
Yes. A substantive independent review that may save some time and money.
Hopefully,
If you did a bad job, it might not. But one other idea I've been thinking about recently is, to what extent can the assessors share information? And this is something we've been working on in terms of pooling, and I think it ties to the chemical information database, but to what extent can information gathered by one assessor be shared with another assessor, not necessarily the CBI of a particular product or process, but to the extent that information reviewed by one assessor may be useful by another, and that could be toxicological data on individual chemicals. It could be information about manufacturing processes or life cycle data or things like that. But I think that when we start thinking about qualifying assessors, we ought to think about how can we pool non-confidential information between assessors to really begin to be able to leverage this work, drop the cost of alternative assessments. And when things are pooled like that, you know, if you have multiple organizations sharing, say, for example, toxicological data on a chemical, if there's a problem there, that gets to Bill's idea, you know, the sort of shining light on it, right? If one assessor may say, you know what, I don't agree with that value for aquatic toxicity, and now you have an opportunity to resolve conflict based on very specific information. And I think there's a lot of power in that in terms of qualifying assessors who now have access to this pool of information that can be overseen by the other assessors and even by DTSC. And I think that could really help to leverage costs. You'd be growing more and more information and potentially lowering the cost of doing AAs over time.
Jay, we haven't heard from you yet.
Okay. By the way, I was a little about 10, 15 minutes late, but let me go through my homework first. You can hear, right?
Yes.
Okay. I just go back to the second page, the flow chart. When I look at the QA processes, you know, and where the QA processes need to be applied, within this entire, the AA processes. So I had three criteria in mind. The first one was the data integrity. Data integrity really coming from applicants and then the processes in terms of all this toxicology data, et cetera. So the data integrity, number one. Number two consideration is the cost. Cost for both DTSC, which is tax money, and also the cost inflicting, the applicant. The number three consideration I had is the transparency that Joe went in great lengths. But when I look at the transparency, the transparency of the process, transparency on data collections, data presentations, transparency for information sharing. So I look at the three possible routes to get the alternative materials or assembled product that could be approved by DTSC. So I really make DTSC as a focal point of this entire process. So the number one process, of course, applicant apply their alternative, chemicals or assemblies to DTSC, and then DTSC review the applicant's information and data, and then if nothing is really violating in terms of all this database available, regulations available, etc., then they can approve. Okay, so that's the number one pass. And then number two pass is that DTSC, based on all their review, based on the information and the data and regulatory the status of that particular ingredient or assembled product, and then DTSC says, okay, no, unfortunately, we're going to reject it. So it goes back to applicant, and then the applicant submits a request to DSC for third-party review. And then at that point, I bring this so-called the transparency, the conditions, meaning that when the DTSC accepts the request by the applicants, and then they request the third-party review. Now, the third-party compositions and qualifications, I think you all have good ideas. So, to me, I really don't have much preference when it comes to third-party review. And I also agree, Lauren, the question that she answers to Bill's question, that if the small company that, does not have internal capability, then, they went out, contract out third party, and then third party came up the informations and, data, then, I think that's good enough for me. So then third party review, but important thing is in keeping the transparency, that I think the three parties really should be present. Either it could be nowadays, as Dave said, either by web conference, or nowadays you even can do video conferencing too. So the important thing here is that the DTS and applicant and then third party should be present, so that we have transparency there. And then the third party submit the recommendation to DTSC and the review, the third party review, and then they can the DTSC either approve or reject. So when the second time rejection goes back to applicant, and then applicant make a decision whether they just, you know, wrap it up and goes home, or they pursue a challenge, the DTSC decision. So at that point, I just put it in some, the name I call, science review board. Okay, so it could be science advisory board too. All the information goes in to the science review board. Now, the information now, those information, I think, required to be scrutinized not only by DTSC, but, the science review board much more closely, because to me, that the third round through the science review board should be the last resort for the applicant, to plead their case. So definitely we need a very thorough quality assurance the process by a certified the expert or the professional to audit those processes. And then science review board, here again, my envision here to have all the parties should be present so that there is no buts, ifs, if the DTSC finally either approves or rejects. Okay? So the quality assurance-wise, the way I see it, all the data transactions, I would say, the submissions by the applicant and also the second round review by the third party, all the data submitted and transaction requires the QA process, and then followed by third round, all the multiple documents and the data submitted to science review board should be required very thorough quality assurance processes.
Jay,
yes.
I have a question for you about this, if I understand correctly. That in essence, this AA that's been perhaps started internally, and if we've listened to some of the other discussions, then will have been checked by a third party. Then it would either go to DTSC or to the Science Review Board, who is in essence going to have to redo the AA again. It's not just a matter of looking at it and saying, oh, that looks good to me. But in order to truly do the kind of scrub that you're talking about, in essence, that Science Review Board is going to have to start from first principles and do it again. Is that, do you envision it as being something else? Am I misinterpreting what you've
said? Yeah, that could be a process. But, however, it's a little more work for DTSC. Before they reject, I would envision to put something there that what is missing, what is required to provide more information on, so that the next round really doesn't have to repeat what the first round that the DTSC has already reviewed, So I don't know the mechanism of that, but somehow DTSC should be able to pinpoint the saying for the applicant, time and the cost, the saying, okay, these are what we like to understand more, or these are the missing information.
Jay, this is Colleen. In answer to Bill's question, I thought that what you described in a nutshell was an internal review followed by a third-party review, or internal preparation of the AA followed by
right.
a third-party review, submittal to DTSC. DTSC would then accept or reject the AA. If rejected, the applicant could appeal, if you will, to this science advisory board, which would be the last word. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Correct. But I think, the DTS could do a real, help or favor to applicants, if they provide, I don't know whether it's legal or not, provide reasons of rejection.
Well, yeah, I understand that. So that there wouldn't be a complete do-over. The focus would be on the part that was deficient or missing.
Correct. Correct.
Other Did questions for Jay? If not, we are at approximately 5 till 11 Pacific time.
I'm sorry. I do have one comment, Bill, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, just a comment that I think that I do like the idea of a science review board for dealing with conflict resolution, but I have some concerns about the level at which DTSC would be engaged in this proposal for approving these assessments. I think that's a pretty high level of effort, and I'm wondering if we could maybe, not now, but you know, think in terms of how to refine that to reduce the level of effort required for DTSC. But I do like the idea of a science review board for resolving conflict.
And if I could piggyback on that, Lauren, something that we haven't talked much about here, but frankly is top of mind for me, is I fundamentally believe that this process is not going to involve one company doing one AA and being checked two or three times and accepted or rejected. I think there's going to be a number of AAs simply because of the economic importance of some of the things that are going to be dealt with. And people who are stakeholders, for whatever reason, will do AAs and submit them to the public domain, which, if I remember correctly, is anticipated, or at least was anticipated in regulation before, if not in the statute. And ultimately, whoever it is that decides is not going to be just deciding on the basis of one AA that comes to them, but on the basis of AAs that take different approaches, perhaps use different data, stir it together differently, and perhaps come to different conclusions. And at some point or another, whether it's a science advisory board, a review board, or DTSC itself, there's going to need to be a final decision-making process that's built into this, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree also. But I think that ultimately is DTSC's job to figure out how they want to best execute it. And but you're absolutely correct, Bill. That's got to be there will be that final thing, and that's where it's different than the verification of a single greenhouse gas number, because those come in different ways, and so that's where this is uniquely different. Especially if there are many AAs for the same kind of thing, then it has to be DTSC that makes the ultimate decision that this is what we, DTSC, are going to accept.
And Todd, I might add, you can have two or three different approaches to this that are sent out to two or three different third-party validators and have them perfectly well validated. So now you have three what appear to be equivalent AAs validated by the process coming to a point, and ultimately somebody has to decide.
I hadn't really thought about that happening. So you think like competitors will do their own AAs?
It will be competitors, it will be NGOs, it will be anyone who is a stakeholder in the process,
right?
Who believes that there's a way that this should end.
Right. And now another point I think that's important is that that's not necessarily a bad thing. It could be that there are ways of addressing the presence of a chemical of concern in a product. And I'm not saying I would necessarily recommend this, but let's say somebody develops a closed loop management system for lead in a particular product or something like that, while somebody else completely eliminates it. There's different strategies in terms of product design, and so I think that there could be situations where people do AAs on and come up with different design solutions that could solve the problem.
That's
so,
certainly true, Lauren. And I, you know, I'm not going to go into this here, but I have in the back of my mind two or three particular train wreck scenarios that essentially will put whoever it is making the decision in charge of billion-dollar decisions. And this is not to be ominous, but
you envision this as competitive AAs, not comments or critiques of an AA.
Oh, there will be competitive AAs. Mm-hmm. There will be.
Well, yeah, because with different products, even the same kind of product, there could be several solutions to it.
So let me give you
because
an example.
I mean, that doesn't really happen in the whole, you know, sort of risk assessment, you know, kind of world. I mean, it's all common. People comment on the documents done, want to get a change. Could be a dramatic change, but it's all focused on, you know, an original document and how
well,
to how
if
to
you
do
have
that.
Compound A and compound B that are alternatives in a process.
Yeah.
And compound A becomes a priority chemical.
Right.
Let's say the person who's manufactures compound A generates the AA, and obviously because compound B is an alternative, you'll have to compare it to compound B.
Mm-hmm.
The manufacturer of compound B, of course, is a stakeholder in this process.
Right.
And whether it's a matter of commenting on the first AA or of generating an AA from first principles, comparing compound B to compound A,
right.
I suspect that at the very least there'll be comments. I'm pretty sure that the manufacturer of compound B will make the strongest case that he or she can make
mm-hmm.
with respect for that being the preferred alternative.
And that will essentially be an independent alternative analysis.
And at some point or another, there's
yeah.
and both of these, I will guarantee you, will pass a third-party check.
Yeah.
And then, somewhere along the line, someone's going to have to make the decision about whether one is more compelling than the other or they both fade into the noise of experimental error.
That's going to be Odette.
There's the opportune point for a break.
So anyway, it's time for a break. What I'd like you to consider during the break is whether you have some comments that you want to make on the work plans. I think we've pretty well reviewed the homework and various approaches, and I want to leave a little time for DTSC if there are some things that aren't clear from things that we've said that you all should come back and ask us if there are things. But why don't we go ahead? I have it now at 1:02 Central Time. That is 11:02 Pacific Time. Could we come back together at 11:15 Pacific Time?
Sure.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Very good. Why don't we go ahead and get started then? We have, of course, lost Bob and Todd, and while that's regrettable, I think we can probably trudge on. Let's talk a little bit about the work plans. And I'm not necessarily trying to fill 45 minutes here, but if there are some things that you'd like to say about those that weren't said in your homework or what you envision the work plans to be, this would be a great time to air it out. Anyone got some thoughts?
Yeah, this is Lauren. I was wondering if Odette would be willing to give us a little bit of sort of an update or summary of how you see the work plans fitting into this. I have some thoughts, but before I say anything, I just want to make sure they're not inconsistent.
Well,
a little refresher on the work plans.
Okay. Well, I guess I can speak to, you know, how it would fit in under the draft regulations. You know, at this point, we're looking for input and suggestions. The concept in the draft regulation was that they would give us kind of their plan, the scope of alternatives they were going to look at, the factors they were going to look at, and their plan going forward, including timelines. And our review would be basically for two purposes. One, does the work plan look like what they come out with is going to meet the requirements of the statute and the regulations? And number two, you know, we had the concept in the regulations of where DTSC would specify how much time they had to complete the AA, and so the information that was provided in the work plan would inform us in terms of making the decision in terms of how much time they should have. But, you know, I mean, that's what was in the prior version of the regulations. That's not to say that has to be what it is going forward. So I don't want to limit your thinking or your advice.
Okay, thanks.
So go ahead, Lauren. You have the floor.
Okay. Well, at first, I think my views about the work plans have changed over time, and at first I thought they were not that significant in terms of you know, what they added to doing the alternatives assessment. But in a way, I could imagine a work plan even maybe obviating the need for an alternatives assessment. So, for example, if you're clear that you have a chemical of concern and a product of concern, this is really an important time for you to reconsider the product design in many, many different ways. And that work plan could look at okay, what's here's a strategy. We're going to try. We're going to look at chemical substitution as one strategy. We're going to look at material selection as another strategy that may allow us to not use this chemical at all. Or we're going to look at product design or even business model changing that might change this from a product of concern to not a product of concern. So I'm envisioning that the work plan is really like a, almost like a brainstorming tool for different strategies with a timeline on the results of these potentially different design strategies to deal with the chemical of concern and a material of concern. So it could be a strategy for innovation as well, not just, you know, how long. And so rather than being just how long is it going to take you to do your AA, it could be what are your different strategic options and when will you have answers about which ones you're going to take, that kind of thing.
Or how you're going to evaluate them, perhaps.
Yes, and how you're going to evaluate them. They may be, you know, we talked a little bit about there may be, you know, the idea of competing AAs and also multiple solutions. It may, this may be, the work plan may be the key to using the AA regs to drive innovation in terms of here's your chance. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Lauren. Other thoughts?
This is Joe. Well, I think that's a very, that's an interesting perspective on the work plans. I guess I just want to raise a concern. I'm not really sure what I think about it, but we've talked a lot about limited DTSC resources and how they ought to be deployed. And, I mean, it seems like submission of the an AA work plan, I mean, the point of developing a formal AA work plan is to submit it to DTSC and then obtain DTSC review and specification of a timeline. And I just wonder if DTSC is realistically going to be able to do that, and if that's how we would choose to deploy limited DTSC resources as opposed to some of the other things that we've talked about. So I guess that's a concern that, that I have. I mean, you know, we may be piling on DTSC, but what we really need at some point to do is rank the importance of various tasks that they do, and I'm not sure where this would rank.
That's a really good question, Joe, and that is something that we would like your input on, is, you know, how we do best deploy the limited resources we have.
I'd like to pile on a little bit here, and at the risk of sounding like an unreconstructed libertarian, which is totally correct, one of the things that I can see an advantage to the work plan from this perspective, that if you're breaking reasonably new territory here and you're a company doing this, there could be some utility to presenting a work plan and a timeline to DTSC and at least getting a sign-off that, that you're moving in the right direction. My concern about what the way I read the regs from the last time was that the work plan looked to me to be about 80% of the work. And I think that, that exceeds what a work plan ought to be. My thought is that if there's utility to the work plan, it is in avoiding making a mistake that costs more work after it's all done. As you know, my concern has been for a number of steps that are largely duplicative through the process that don't add much other than cost. And done incorrectly, I see the work plan as yet another duplicative step. On the other hand, if the work plan were an outline, and a relatively flexible outline, on how you're going to approach the issue of doing an AA, along with a timeline, that would not require deep analysis by DTSC other than to say, yeah, that at least looks like a reasonable way to approach the problem. That's the kind of level that I would imagine the work plan to operate. I would not imagine a work plan to be, for example, a substitute for a tiered alternatives assessment, wherein maybe you do 50% of the work in the work plan and decide whether that's enough or not. I would look at it as being more a 10 to 20% start with nodding approval from the agency that this looks like it's going in the right direction, whereupon off you can go and do the real work. That's sort of the way I envision it. It's more to keep you from doing the wrong thing and having to redo than it is being highly definitive about exactly what you are going to do.
This is Dale. My comments on that are that I think the work plan is a reasonable way to get the plan on the docket and on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the work plan is submitted to say that this process is now ongoing. It started, and here's the timeline. And as I mentioned before, it's simply a way to allow the company to say, here's what we're doing. Here's the qualifications of the parts that are actually going to take place. Then here's the timeline. And I see it as a cursory review by DTSC. I don't think you should put in the resources into this part of it, because I think this would be the wrong area to put it into. So I think it's just, it's submitted. It's like a submission that this is now ongoing and it's on the clock. And then DTSC confirms, yes, it's on the clock. But I would not suggest going through a detailed analysis of saying, yes, this looks good, you're on the right track, because that's going to take then internal resources that probably are not there.
Okay.
This is Lauren. I totally agree with that, because I think the work plan, I don't see these AA regs as the purpose of these AA regs is not to drive the generation of AAs in California. It's to drive the change in product design to eliminate chemicals of concern and product concerns, and hopefully have a reverberating effect through all product design, so people use the safest possible materials and the best type of material flow system. So I think giving people an opportunity to solve the problem creatively on the clock, as Dale says, is good. And then if they're unsuccessful, then they may be driven into, okay, now you must do this kind of NAA because you haven't met your commitments to these other possible approaches. But I think we want to give them a chance to innovate and solve the problems in the best way that they can creatively figure it out to do.
Jay, you have some thoughts?
I think you said all. Collectively all of you. I would, interpret or envisioning the work plan is like a roadmap. Roadmap for DTSC, roadmap for the entire AA process is where we are going to go and what are we going to achieve at the end of the process. So this could be very brief with the roadmap with some brevity of notations, for example, it should not be very complicated at all. So that's my input here.
Odette, do you have any, before we sort of wrap back to the original discussion, you have any thoughts from what you've heard? Does that kind of resonate, anything you've heard resonate with you?
Yeah, I think so. That's very helpful in terms of giving us guidance. And while, as we always say, we're not looking for consensus here, I think I see a certain amount of consensus in terms of not making the work plan too workload intensive and, minimizing the amount of DTSC resources spent on the review. So that's good to know.
Well, I might just add one brief thing. The need for DTSC involvement in review of the work plans, there's an interplay there between that need and the degree to which the assessors that produce the work plan are, certified and independent. meaning the more the more independent and certified, if they're subject certified assessors, may require less sort of oversight on their work plans by DTSC. But if they're not certified and they're internal company, you know, assessors, it might be more appropriate for more review.
Okay.
More utility to more review.
All right. So let's then do one other thing, Odette. Let's go back to the first part of the discussion. Are there questions that you have for us of things that you heard that are not clear that you'd like some clarification on, or do you think you have what you need from the subcommittee in terms of the overall process?
Okay, I will throw a question. You guys have interestingly gone down, in some of your earlier discussions today, gone down a path on a question that we did not pose. And frankly, the reason we didn't pose it is that we kind of viewed it as a policy versus a science decision. But I'm just going to toss this out and see if maybe you can repeat back your thoughts on this so we can get more clarification. And that is, I've heard a lot of you talk about when these AAs come in, whether it be just a single AA from the manufacturer, or it could be multiple. Some of you use the word competing AAs, which could be from multiple manufacturers of the same type of priority product, or it could also be AAs prepared by members of the public. And you've talked a lot about who should make the decision. And so I'd like to hear a little bit more about, when you're talking about who should make the decision, exactly what you mean by the decision.
Can I just add a smidge more context here? This is Colleen. Just going back to the last version of the regs, I think the way culmination or consequences of an AA being submitted to us were, I think it would be expressed colloquially as, we're not in the business of being winners and losers. The only sort of direct DTSC action upon receipt of an AA was basically to use that to proceed to the regulatory response selection. So I think what Odette's saying is, we heard something different from that from you today, so we want to make sure that we first heard you correctly, and if so, could you expand on how you see this working?
I guess that's a question for me, since I'm the one who mainly brought the issue up. Because there is a regulatory response, there are consequences. Now, there may be very small consequences. If the consequences are, you know, dealing with the waste at end of life or a minor labeling requirement, that's perhaps not so consequential. But if I remember correctly, you have a range of regulatory responses. And in the end, part of the regulatory response, as I understand it, is going to be as a result of an alternatives analysis that possibly shows that there are, as a result of this analysis, alternatives which are to be preferred versus that of the priority chemical in the priority product. And from that, the regulatory response comes. So that's when you then have a response associated with one product in a space versus or chemical in a space versus another, then that's, it perhaps doesn't pick winners or losers, but it certainly tilts the scale one way or another. And that is what was going through my mind, is in the end, I've looked at a fair number of life cycle assessments, which is a bit different, but in the same vein. And what you discover is that there can be lots and lots and lots of, I'll call it experimental error, although it isn't in fact error. There is variability associated with process. There's variability associated with different toxicology. There's variability through it. And so at some point or another, in that AA, in order for you to be able to make those kinds of decisions, you're going to have to decide whether the difference between one alternative and another is outside the realm of normal variability. And if it is that difference significant enough to warrant what kind of regulatory response? That's kind of the path that I was going down. And if I've misunderstood, please tell me.
No, that helps clarify a lot for us, your thinking. Thank you.
Yeah, let me, this is Dale. Let me comment on that also, because I don't see, you know,
there obviously will be competing AAs, but I think DTSC has to deal with them one at a time, because there can be several solutions to a problem. Now, they can be collectively thought of if manufacturers would go together, either through a consortium or some kind of alliance, and submit something for several companies. But then still, it's a single AA. So I view it that way. When you do quality assurance on and you look at the way quality assurance has been done, or a process where you're reviewing a lot of data, there is a standard that's set up to allow you to look at both human error and intentional error. And it was set up, and it's used by a lot of people in the quality assurance industry, and it was developed originally from a military standard looking at different types of procedures, and it's called the MIL standard. And it sets up to differentiate the within a series of reviews and numbers and everything else. It sets up a process where you statistically go in, pick the numbers and everything to actually assess, and you're doing around 10% review, but it's picked statistically, and it allows you to then verify that there's a it falls within what you would call human error or experimental error, and it doesn't fall outside of that. It's extremely valuable way of doing it, much more valuable than actually saying, looking at an entire document and rereading it over and over and over again by several people, because every time you do that, you also have human error and human opinion in there. So there are processes that allow you to do things in a more of an expedited fashion.
Well, it's a really interesting question you've raised, Odette, and Bill also. I mean, I would think that, first of all, I completely agree with Bill that hopefully there are going to be some consequences of these AAs. I mean, DTSC is going to be identifying chemicals of concern in products of concern, and if all this process does is end up validating the status quo, it's not going to be, you know, changing anything at all. So presumably there's going to be changes recommended and insights gained by going through this process about better ways to do things. And it could be lots of different things, a different chemical, a different process, a different way to manage a chemical. I mean, all different kinds of things could result from an AA. But I would think that if DTSC has different AAs out there, and then it has to, that reach different results, different recommendations, and then it has to choose between them, I mean, it's going to be in the position of having to do basically pretty close to de novo analyses of all those and deciding which ones it thinks is best. And I don't know, so I would think that there's got to be a way to produce, you know, one AA by our certified, you know, assessors that is going to be the analysis that DTSC will rely on, and so that alternative ways of doing AA, alternative ways of looking at the data need to be fed into that assessor for consideration, as comments or even as, you know, as a different way to do things, but then that will all be then the responsibility of the of the responsible assessor to make a decision about the best way to do it. And then obviously if there are disagreements with that, I mean, we've talked about an appeal process. I mean, DTSC may have to manage that. But I would think there's going to have to be, you know, ultimately an AA that DTSC will rely on, and then, yeah, there will be regulatory responses coming out of that. I mean, I think that's the goal here.
So are you suggesting that there be a single A? Let's say there's six manufacturers, and in reality there's probably a lot more than six. Let's just say six manufacturers who make a product that falls into a particular priority product category. Are you saying that there should be a single AA, and the result of that AA should be the choice for all six manufacturers rather than different manufacturers having a different approach for dealing with the concerns presented by the chemical of concern in the product?
Well, that's an interesting, yeah, I wasn't really thinking of that context. I was thinking there's, you know, I was thinking about Bill's example of, you know, there's chemical A and chemical B in products of concern, in a particular product of concern, and the manufacturers of chemical A and chemical B may have different, come out with different assessments, different AAs. But now you're talking about there are multiple, what I guess, versions of the product of concern made by different manufacturers, and they all have to do their own AAs. Yeah, they could get different results. Yeah, I don't know.
This is Lauren. This is reminding me, Bill, I think you're having an impact on me because I'm remembering specific quotes from you back at old meetings and things like that.
Lord, is that scary?
It is scary.
It is.
But, you know, they're very good quotes. But I do remember an example you used of saying, you know, what if you're in the business of creating pesticides that kill flies and somebody does an alternatives assessment and comes up with a fly swatter. Remember that one?
Yeah, well.
Yeah. So I think this is that's a good example. If you're in the business of, you know, manufacturing pesticides and there are safer chemical alternatives, then it seems like there's no excuse to go toward, you know, to not accept that as the availability of alternatives. But if you're being forced to, because they're, you know, someone else makes fly swatters, does that mean does that put the chemical manufacturer out of business? I think that's a very good analogy there.
And it actually, you know, without belaboring it, it can be even more complicated. Take my chemical A, chemical B example, where the manufacturer of chemical A does an alternatives assessment that, surprisingly enough, finds that chemical A is a preferred alternative. And then the manufacturer of chemical B does one and surprisingly finds that chemical B is the preferred alternative. And an NGO does one and finds that no chemical at all is a preferred alternative. Take a different approach altogether. Who decides? And on what basis?
Well, in this example, chemical A, I guess, is a chemical of concern and not chemical B, right?
Correct. But they have exactly the same function and very nearly the same chemical structure.
Right. Well, there's an assessor that the manufacturer of chemical A, or the product that contains it anyway, has to hire. Either they do it themselves or they have to hire a third party to come up with an AA that is then going to be the basis of a regulatory response. And I would think in this example, that assessor has to make the best make a judgment about these different ways of doing it.
But you will have two other groups that will do AAs and put them in the public domain, which is anticipated, if I remember correctly, either by the regulations or the statute.
Right.
So now you let's hypothesize just for a moment that everybody did this honestly, but there wasn't one common data set to work from because there's variability in the data. Or there are different approaches, or different weights used to different characteristics, as would be done in various kinds of assessments. The point I'm trying to make here, and this is not meant to be sinister or difficult or ball the process up, but at some point or another, after you have all of the AAs done and checked by as many iterations of the process as you want to check it, I will guarantee you that you will come to a point where you will have two or three different approaches to this that give you two or three, at least qualitatively, if not quantitatively, different answers. And somewhere along the line, there's going to have to be a decision made about what's the most compelling answer. And DTSC is ultimately going to have to make that decision.
I don't see why you have to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because here you have the products. The alternative assessments are done by qualified people. They, in fact, are correct, and the chemical that's being substituted is, you know, an acceptable substitution. Why do you have to make a decision between two of them? They're two different manufacturers. They may be two different products.
They're two different chemicals. And if one is for some reason or another a chemical of concern, and the other is not.
Mm-hmm.
but you're going to do the alternatives assessment, is the prejudice that we've declared this a chemical concern regardless of what the AA says, you have to substitute it?
Well, I think there's two different issues here. I agree with Dale that, you know, the regulatory response, if you decide there is no alternative for this chemical of concern based on your assessment and you're going to keep using that chemical of concern, well, that begs a regulatory response. But if you decide there is an alternative and it appears to be better, whether it's a redesign or a fly swatter or whatever, and you've solved the problem, you've solved the problem in whatever way, then that begs a different regulatory response. But the issue of the actual toxicological data, I think that's a different issue, and that's the reason I think developing a shared system for assessors is really important, because reasonable toxicologists will disagree, and not on every endpoint, but maybe on a key endpoint for particular chemicals. And that's when, you know, maybe OEHA and needs to step in and say, is this or is this not a carcinogen? And if you can't tell, maybe then to make a decision, somebody's going to have to test it or whatever. But there, it seems like at the level of specific toxicological data, there is a place for oversight and conflict mediation. But at the level of different AAs, they each would beg a different regulatory response.
But let's take that example another way. Let's say that you have different parameters associated with your analysis. At some point or another, you're going to either have to weight them equally or unequally. And different approaches to an AA might have different weights. This is one of the subjective measures. At some point or another, either you're going to have very specific guidance about how you weight these things, which in essence, you know, if you drive it out to its logical extent, winds up with someone, probably DTSC, in essence giving you what amounts to a tax form that you just sort of fill in the blanks, stir gently, and it comes out the end. Or there's variability in the result that comes. This is not a problem we're going to solve today. I'm teeing it up more from my perspective, from industry, and particularly from a particular part of industry, of imagining ways in which you could get to an end game and find yourself in a bad place because of the way the process goes. This is the way we all look at these things. It's simply one of the things that colors my approach. And my sentiment simply is that as we're thinking about this going forward, imagine a situation where you get to the end where there is not one AA with a clear winner and a clear loser, wherein it's very easy to pick a regulatory response that says, the chemical that we've picked as a chemical of concern, after we've done the AA, shows that it has two or three other alternatives that should be referred, and we choose to do this with respect to that chemical of concern. Think about what happens when there are close calls. In the beginning, you know, one of the things that going back in this process a long way, one of the things that I always sort of hoped for was that what this process would be more designed to do than anything else would be to find things that could be called quick wins, things that where there were unambiguously better alternatives, such that you didn't wind up with the hard cases, driving things at the beginning. And maybe that's still kind of my hope, is that we have a few laughers here in order to cut our teeth on the process. But eventually you will get to close calls, and you need to think through how close calls will be dealt with. And that's, I guess, basically my only admonition here.
Which is exactly why you need some kind of a scientific review board in the end. Somebody has to make a recommendation. And the recommendation then goes to DTSC, and then they either act on it or don't act on it or whatever they happen to do. Happen to have to do. So the field that I'm in the field of toxicology, everything is a close call. But then everything gets called. And so you have to deal with that on a daily basis. And there's a certain amount of scientific rigor to it, and there's a certain amount of experience, and
but you have to make those calls. And so it's not something new.
More on this topic or others? I'm hearing silence, which is a wonderful thing.
Well, the one thing that I would like to reiterate from the my homework thing is that I think to make this process work and make it so that companies can do it, and there's not 50,000 different ways of doing something which would turn out to be a regulatory nightmare, I think you have to come out with, you know, I call it a guidance document, but it's actually a part of the regulation, to state what's the minimal requirements of the tools to use. And I think that would go a long way to stimulate this right on the front end. And I think that has to be there.
Other?
I think that's good advice.
Other final comments? Well, I'm hearing us sort of punched out on the topic, and I want to, at this point, I want to say thank you to all of you for the time you've invested in both of these calls. As usual, it is wonderful to be able to have these kinds of discussions with people who are so knowledgeable and so engaged, and you are all a pleasure to work with, and I appreciate that. At this point, unless there's something more for the good of the group, I will offer you the opportunity to go back to your normal lives, and I will see you on the 14th of July in Sacramento.
And this is Odette, and I would like to second Bill's thanks for everything you've put into this effort, and to ask that if you do want to submit additional written comments, and again, thank you to all of you who have done that. You've really provided us with a lot to work with. But if you have additional thoughts, we would like to receive them by next Monday, June 20th, in order to incorporate them into not only the report outs, which we're going to be sending to you to review to make sure we've captured things completely and accurately, but also for consideration as we develop the concept options that we'll be sending out in advance of the meeting in July for the consideration by the whole group. And so that's all I have to say. Thank you all.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you all.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.